Cause? Did that phone call from the inspector have something to do with the Shisa do? You aren't keeping something from me, are you?
No.
Final warning. If you don't answer me, I'll rip it from your throat. And while I'm at it, I'll ask anything else I feel like asking too.
That's not fair. I can't use voice on you, I cried. You're only teaching me to resist it.
You'll never be able to use it on me. Not if I teach you. Teacher and student develop immunity to each other. There's quite an incentive for you, eh, Miss Lane? Now talk, or I'll take the information I want, and if you fight me, it'll hurt.
He was a shark who'd scented blood, and he wasn't going to stop circling until he'd devoured me. I had no doubt he would do as he was threatening, and if he got started forcing answers from me, I was afraid of what he might ask. He'd heard the address. With or without me, he was going there. It would be better if I went, too. I'd think of a plan along the way. Get in the car. I'll tell you while we're driving.
My bike's out front. If traffic's bad, it's faster. If you've been holding out on me, you're in deep trouble, Miss Lane.
Of that I had no doubt. But I wasn't sure who was going to be more pissed at me before the night was through. Barron's because I hadn't told him sooner, or Blaine because I'd broken my promise to him and told Barron's at all. The alien thing piercing my tongue felt intrusive and dangerous in my mouth. Dublin was a dark, bizarre circus that I was walking through on a high wire, and if there was a safety net somewhere below me, I sure couldn't see it. Chapter 7. Like jacked-up pickup trucks in the deep south, Harleys are an ode to testosterone. The bigger and louder, the better. Down south, trucks and bikes roar. Look at me. Hot damn, I'm big and noisy and wild and yee-haw! Wouldn't you like a piece of me? Barron's Harley didn't roar. It didn't even purr. A chrome and ebony predator, it glided soundlessly into the night, whispering, I'm big and silent and deadly, and you'd better hope I don't get a piece of you. I could feel fury in the set of his shoulders beneath my hands as we careened through narrow alleys, around corners, laying the bike so low I had to tuck up my feet and keep my legs crushed to the sides for fear of scraping off a few layers of skin. But as with everything else Barron's undertook, he was a master of precision. The bike did things for him I wasn't sure a bike could do. Several times I almost wrapped my arms and legs around him and clambered onto his back for fear of falling off. His body bristled with anger. The fact that I knew something about the book that I hadn't told him was as deep a transgression as transgressions could go, as far as he was concerned. I'd learned the last time we'd had a brush with the Shisa do that it was his end-all be-all, for whatever reason. Despite the unnerving dark energy rolling off him, eventually I hugged him with all my might just to stay on the bike. It was like embracing a low-level electrical current. Sometimes I wondered if Barron's had any real awareness of risk of injury.
He doesn't live like he does.
It's not like you don't keep secrets from me, I finally shouted against his ear.
I don't keep ones from you that involve the fucking book,
he snarled over his shoulder.
That's our deal, isn't it? If nothing else, we're honest with each other about the book.
I don't trust you.
And you think I trust you? You haven't been out of fucking diapers long enough to be trusted, Miss Lane. I'm not even sure you should be allowed to handle sharp objects.
I punched him in the side. That's not true. Who ate Unseelie? Who survived no matter the cost? Who keeps getting out there facing all kinds of twisted monsters and still manages to find something to smile about while she does it? That takes real strength. That's more than you can do. You're grumpy and broody and secretive all the time. You're no joy to live with. I can tell you that.
I smile sometimes. I even laughed about your hat.
McHalo, I corrected tightly. It's a brilliant invention, and it means I don't need you or Blaine to keep me safe from shades. And that, Jericho Barron's, is worth its weight in gold, not needing either of you for something.
Who came to teach a voice tonight? Do you think you could find another teacher? Those who can use that power don't share it. Whether you like it or not, you do need me, and you've needed me since the day you set foot in this country. Remember that, and stop pissing me off.
You need me, too, I growled.
That's why I'm teaching you. That's why I gave you a safe place to live. That's why I keep saving your life and try to give you the things you want.
Oh, the things I want! I stammered because I was so mad I tried to spit all the words out at once. How about answers? Try giving me those. He laughed, and the sound bounced back off the brick walls of the narrow alley down which we sped, making it sound like men were laughing all around me, and it was creepy.
The day I give you answers will be the day you no longer need them.
The day I no longer need them, I told him icily, will be the day I'm dead. By the time we arrived at the crime scene, the shooter had blown his head off. What hostages had survived were being treated, and the grim duty of counting and collecting bodies had begun. The street was closed around the pub from one end of the block to the next, crammed with police cars and ambulances, and crawling with garda. We parked and dismounted a block from the scene.
I'm assuming the book was here. Do you feel it?
I shook my head. It's already gone. That way. I pointed west. An icy channel sluiced east through the night. I would lead him in the opposite direction, and eventually claim that I'd lost its signal. I felt sick to my stomach, and not because of all the bodies and blood. The shisadu is the ultimate in nausea. I reached in my pocket and thumbed out a Tums. I had the beginnings of a brutal migraine, and hoped it wouldn't spike.
Later, you're going to tell me everything you know. Somehow you figured out how it's moving around the city, and it's linked to the crimes, isn't it?
He was good. When I nodded gingerly, trying not to split my skull, he said,
And somehow you managed to coerce Jane into feeding you information. How you accomplished that, frankly, confounds me.
Gee, maybe I'm not as inept as you think I am. I popped another Tums in my mouth and made a mental note to start carrying aspirin, too. After a pause, he said tightly,
Maybe you're not.
Which was very nearly an apology from Barron's. I fed him unseelie.
Are you fucking nuts?
Barron's exploded. It worked. His eyes narrowed.
One might think you're developing situational ethics.
You think I don't know what those are? My father's an attorney. I know what those are. A faint smile curved his lips.
Get back on the bike and tell me where to go.
I'll tell you where to go, I muttered sourly, and he laughed. As we sped down the street, away from the dark book, my headache began to ease. I was abruptly so aroused that I caught myself on the dangerous verge of rubbing my aching nipples against Barron's back. I jerked away instantly and glanced over my shoulder. My heart sank. I reached for my spear. It was gone. Barron's must have felt the tension in my body, because he glanced over his shoulder at me and saw what I'd seen. The Fey Prince, sifting down the street behind us, one moment there, then gone, the next a few dozen feet closer.
It's bad enough that you didn't tell me about the book, Miss Lane, but tell me you didn't tell him.
I had to. I needed him to do something for me, and it was all I had to offer up that I was willing to part with. But I didn't tell him everything. In fact, I deliberately led him astray. So how had he found me tonight? Dumb luck? He couldn't possibly be checking out every crime in the city. Anger reclaimed Barron's body, worse than before. He stopped so abruptly that I was slammed into his back, fell off the bike, and went sprawling. By the time I stood up and dusted myself off, Barron's was off the bike. Blaine, too, had stopped, and was standing in the street about 25 feet away.
Come here, Miss Lane. Now.
I didn't move. I was pissed that he dumped me like that. It had made my head hurt even worse. Besides, a furious Barron's isn't something you want to stand next to any more than you'd want to cozy up to a pissed-off cobra.
Unless you want him to sift in and take you, get close to me, now. Or do you want to go with him?
I glanced at Blaine and moved to Barron's side. Blaine was so glacial with displeasure that a small blizzard was icing his end of the street, and I wasn't dressed for the weather. Okay, so maybe Blaine scares me a little more than Behrens does. Blaine uses his sexuality against me, and I'm susceptible to it. Behrens doesn't. Even now my hand was slipping to my fly, grazing the zipper, and I nearly whimpered. I sought that cool, alien place in my pounding head. I'm strong, I told myself, a she-seer. I will not give in. Behrens draped an arm over my shoulder, and I moved into the shelter of it. The thing on my tongue burned. My brand itched. At that moment, I despised them both.
Stay away from her,
Behrens growled.
She comes to me of her own will. She calls me, chooses me.
Blaine was in high glamour, gold and bronze and iridescent ice. He raked me with an imperious gaze.
I will attend to you later. You broke our bargain. There is a price for that.
He smiled. But they don't really smile. They paste a human-like expression on, and it chills to the bone because it looks so unnatural on their unnaturally perfect faces.
Do not fear, Michaela. I will, how do you say, kiss it and make it better when I am through.
I removed my hand from my fly. I didn't break our bargain intentionally, Blaine. Behrens overheard something he shouldn't have overheard.
Omission or commission? What difference?
There is one. Even the courts of law permit the distinction.
Human law. Fey law acknowledges no such thing. There are outcomes. The means by which they are achieved have no bearing. You said you did not know how to track the book.
I don't. I just followed a hunch tonight. Got lucky. You?
Impudence and lies, Michaela. I suffer neither. You won't harm a hair on her head, or I'll kill you,
said Behrens. Really? With what? I wanted to ask. Blaine was a fey. My spear was gone, and Rowena had the sword. The book's icy pull was diminishing rapidly. It was moving swiftly. Its next victim was in a car, and a fast one. I had a smug, utterly beside-the-point car lover thought. Not faster than mine. I had a viper. Its keys were in my pocket. The smug thought faded. It offended every ounce of my being to let the book get away, to allow it to go cruising off to destroy more lives. But no matter how insistently my she-seer senses were screaming at me to track it, I didn't dare. Not with Behrens and Blaine here. I needed to know more about the book. I needed to know how to get my hands on it, and do the right thing with it. Who was I kidding? I needed to know what the right thing was. Assuming I eventually got it, who could I trust with it? Blaine? Behrens? God forbid, Rowena? Would the Seelie Queen herself shimmer in and save the day? Somehow, I doubted it. Nothing in my life is easy anymore.
You have no right to it,
Blaine was telling Behrens.
Might makes right. Hasn't that always been your motto?
Behrens said.
You could never understand my motto.
Better than you think, fairy.
There is nothing you could do with it, even if you managed to get it. You do not speak the language in which it was scribed, and could never hope to decode it.
Maybe I have the stones.
Not all of them,
Blaine said coldly, and I knew from the disdain in his voice that he had at least one, if not both of the other translation stones we'd been hunting. All four of the mystical translucent blue-black stones were necessary to reveal the true nature of the Shisadu. Behrens had one already when I met him. I'd recently stolen the second one from Malouche, the event that had precipitated the hostilities between us. Behrens smiled. Clever man. Until that moment, he'd suspected but not been certain.
Maybe I learned enough from your princess that I don't need all four.
Behrens sneered, and there was a world of insinuation in his words. Even I, who had no idea what he was insinuating, heard the insult in them and knew it cut deep. There was history between Blaine and Behrens. They didn't despise each other just because of me. There was more than that going on here. Ice dripped from Blaine's iridescent robes, flowed down the cobbled street, and expanded, covering the pavement from gutter to gutter with a thin black sheet that cracked like gunshots as it encased the warmer stone. Good. Let them fight. Let the book disappear and carry my problems with it. To add fuel to the fire, I said, why do you two hate each other so much?
Have you fucked her yet?
Blaine ignored me completely.
I'm not trying to.
Translation, your efforts have failed.
No, they haven't, I said. He hasn't tried. FYI, boys, and I use that term loosely, there's more to me than sex.
Which is why you're still alive, Miss Lane. Keep cultivating those parts.
Since I had them both together for a novel change, I had a hunch I wanted to test.
What is Barons? I asked Blaine. Human or something else?
The Fey Prince looked at Barons and said nothing. Barons shot me a sharp look.
So, Barons, I said sweetly. Tell me about Blaine. Is he a good guy or a bad guy?
Barons looked away and said nothing. I shook my head, disgusted.
It was as I'd suspected. Men. Were they the same among all species, whether human or not?
Both of you have something on the other, and neither of you will rat it out in order to keep your own secret safe.
Unbelievable. You hate each other and still stick together.
Well, guess what? Screw you. I'm done with you both.
Big words from a little human, Blaine said. You need us. He's right. Deal with it, Miss Lane.
Great. Now they were uniting forces against me. I preferred Blaine disappearing when Barons appeared. Did this mean Blaine wasn't afraid of Barons after all? I eyed the space between them. If Barons were to step forward, would Blaine step back? I could hardly suggest it. After a moment's consideration, I moved out from beneath Barons' arm and stepped behind him. I felt him relax a little. I think he thought I was seeking the shelter of his body, using the movement to show that I'd chosen a side. I imagined he looked pretty self-satisfied right now.
I shoved him forward as hard as I could. Blaine glided instantly back.
Barons jerked a furious look over his shoulder at me. I smiled. I don't think many women push Barons around.
What games are you playing, She-Seer?
Blaine hissed. The Fey Prince feared Barons. I tried to process that thought, but I'm not sure I succeeded.
Can you still feel the book?
Barons asked, a muscle jumping in his jaw.
Yes, where has it gone?
Demanded Blaine.
Which way?
You wasted too much time arguing, I lied. I still had a faint tingle. It had stopped somewhere. It passed beyond my radar a few minutes ago.
I wasn't sure either of them believed me, but what could they do?
Actually, it occurred to me, they both could do something really nasty to me if they felt like it.
Barons could use voice, force me to tell him the truth, and make me hunt it. And if I understood a death-by-sex phase thrall, Blaine could amp up the sex thing and steer me around like a horny little divining rod.
So why weren't they? Because they really were decent guys with decent motives, albeit very screwed-up personalities, or because they didn't want each other around when they used me to track it, and neither could think of a way to get rid of the other at the moment.
Were we all letting it get away to keep each other from getting it?
Wow! I used to have a hard time with high school geometry. Life was way more complicated than math.
Move,
Barron said.
Get on the bike.
I didn't like his tone.
Where will you go, Miss Lane, if not with me or him? Back home to Ashford? Will you strike out on your own? Get a flat? Will your father have to come pack up after you, like you cleaned up after your sister?
I turned and began walking. He followed me, close enough that I could feel his breath on the back of my neck.
He'll sift you,
he said in a low growl,
if you give him the chance.
I don't think he'll risk getting within 20 feet of you, I said coolly.
And you didn't have to remind me that my sister's dead. That was a cheap shot. I got on the Harley. Go with Blaine and be punished for violating our bargain? I'd take my chances with Barron's. For now. Chapter 8.
Some of your mail missed the slot,
Danny said as she pushed open the front door of Barron's Books and Baubles and wheeled her bike inside. I glanced up from the book I was reading, Irish Invasions again, some of the most boring research I'd ever done, except for some of the bits about the Fir Bolg and Fomorians. And after looking behind her to make sure she was alone, smiled. Her curly auburn hair was windblown, her cheeks were flushed with cold, and she'd topped her green pinstriped post-haste incorporated courier uniform with a jauntily perched company cap, and her eternal, "I'm bored and way too cool for words" expression. I liked Annie. She's different from the other she-seers. I've liked her since the day I met her. There's something kindred in us, besides the fact that we're both on vengeance quests, her for her mother and me for my sister. Rowena would kill you for coming here, you know. I frowned as a suspicion occurred to me. Or did she send you?
Nah, I snuck away. I don't think anyone followed me. You're top dog on her shit list, Mac. If she'd sent me, she'd have sent me with the sword.
I caught my breath. I never wanted to battle Danny. Not because I was afraid I might not win, although with her superhuman speed, I supposed it was possible, but because I never wanted to see that exuberant, flippant spark extinguished by my hand or any other. Really? She flashed a gammon grin.
Nah, I don't think she wants you dead. She just wants you to grow the feck up and obey her every word. She's waiting for the same thing from me. She doesn't get that we are growing the feck up. We're just not good little tin soldiers like the rest of her fluff-brained army. If you have a mind of your own, Rowena calls you a child. If you don't have a mind of your own, I call you a sheep. Baa,
she said, making a face.
The abbey so full of them it stinks of sheep shit on a summer day.
I swallowed a laugh. It would only encourage her. Stop cussing, I said. Before she could get pissy, I added, because pretty girls don't have ugly mouths, okay? I cuss sometimes, too, but I do it sparingly.
Who cares if I'm pretty?
She sneered, but I saw right through her. The first time I'd seen her, she'd had makeup on and been in street clothes, and I thought she was older than she was. In her uniform, and without all that black eyeliner, I could see she was 13, 14 at the most, and frozen briefly at that awkward stage all of us suffer for a time. I'd had a gangly period, too, where I'd been convinced the lame jeans had betrayed me, and unlike Alina, I was going to grow up ugly and have to spend the rest of my life eclipsed by my older sister while people said sadly and never quite quietly enough, "Poor Michaela, Alina got the brains and the beauty." Danny was trapped in adolescent limbo. Her torso hadn't yet caught up with her legs and arms, and although her hormones were wreaking havoc on her skin, they had yet to shape her hips and bust. Caught between child and woman was a rough place to be, and she had to fight monsters on top of it. "You're going to be gorgeous one day, Danny," I told her. "So clean up your language if you want to hang out with me." She rolled her eyes, leaned her back against the counter, tossed a rolled-up wad of mail on the counter, and sauntered cockily off toward the magazine rack. But not before I caught the startled, thoughtful look in her eyes. She would remember what I'd said. She would cling to it during her worst moments, and it would get her through, the same way my Aunt Eileen's promise that I would one day be pretty had gotten me through.
"Found it on the sidewalk,"
she tossed over her shoulder.
"Thickened postman can't even hit the slot."
She punctuated it with a glance that was a dare to correct her, and I might have, but she plucked a Hot Rod magazine from the stand.
"Nice choice.
I'd gone for the same thing at her age."
"Do you know you're sitting on the edge of a whole neighborhood of nasty unseelie?"
"You mean the shades?" I said, absently flipping through the mail. "Yeah, I call it a dark zone. I found 3 of them in the city."
"You come up with the coolest names. Doesn't it creep you out that they're so close?"
"Creeps me out that they exist at all. Have you seen what they leave behind?
She shuddered.
Yeah. Rowena sent me out with a team looking for some of us who didn't make it home one night.
I shook my head. She was too young to be seeing so much death. She should be reading magazines and thinking about cute guys. As I thumbed through the flyers and coupons, I spotted an envelope stuck in the middle. I'd seen that kind of envelope before. Thick, plain, off-white vellum. No return address. It had a Dublin postmark, stamped 2 days ago. Michaela Lane, care of Barron's Books and Baubles, it said. I ripped it open with trembling hands.
I talked to Mac tonight.
I closed my eyes, mentally braced myself, then opened them again.
It was so good to hear her voice. I could picture her lying on her bed, sprawled across the rainbow quilt Mom made for her years ago that's frayed at the edges from 100 washings, but she refuses to give it up. I could close my eyes and smell the caramel apple pie with pecan crumb crust Mom was baking. I could hear Daddy in the background, watching baseball with old man Molly from next door, yelling at the Braves as if the batter's ability to hit the ball depended on how loud they could shout. Home feels like it's a million miles away, not 4,000. A mere plane ride, 8 hours, and I could see her. Who am I kidding? Home's a million lifetimes away. I want to tell her so badly. I want to say, Mac, come over here. You're a she-seer. We're adopted. There's a war coming, and I'm trying to stop it, but if I can't, I'm going to have to bring you over here anyway to help us fight. I want to say, I miss you more than anything in the world, and I love you so much. But if I do, she'll know something's wrong. It's been so hard to hide it from her, because she knows me so well. I want to reach through the phone lines and hug my baby sister. Sometimes I'm afraid I'll never get to do it again. That I'll die here, and there'll be a lifetime of things left unsaid and undone. But I can't let myself think that way because... I fisted my hand, crushing the page into a wad. Watch the counter, Danny, I barked, and raced for the bathroom. I slammed the door, locked it, sat on the toilet, and hung my head between my knees. After a moment, I blew my nose and dried my eyes. Her handwriting, her words, her love for me had slid an unexpected knife straight through my heart. Who was sending me these stupid, painful pages, and why? I uncrumpled the page, smoothed it on my legs, and continued where I'd left off. If I do, I'll lose hope, and hope's all I've got. I learned something important tonight. I thought I was hunting the book, and that would be the end of it. But now I know we've got to recreate what once was. We've got to find the 5 foretold by the Haven's prophecy. The she-seer alone isn't enough. We need the stones and the book and the 5. That was the end of the page. There was nothing on the other side. I stared at it until it blurred out of focus. When did grief end? Did it ever? Or did you just get numb from hurting yourself on it so many times? Would I grow emotional scar tissue? I hoped so. At the same time, I hoped not. How could I betray my love for my sister by not suffering every time I thought about her? If I stopped hurting, would that mean I'd stopped loving her a little? How had Alina known about the Haven? I'd only recently learned of its existence and what it was, the High Council of She-Seers. Rowena claimed she'd never met my sister, yet Alina had written in her journal about the governing body of the very organization Rowena ran, and she'd somehow learned of a prophecy foretold by them. What were the 5? What was the Haven's prophecy? I clutched my head and massaged my scalp. Evil books and mysterious players and plots within plots, and now prophecies too? Before I'd needed 5 things, 4 stones and a book. Now I needed 10? That wasn't merely absurd, it was unfair. I stuffed the page in the front pocket of my jeans, stood up, freshened my face, took a deep breath, and went out to relieve Danny of her clerk duties. If my eyes were too bright when I stepped behind the counter, either she didn't notice or she understood a thing or two about grief and left me alone. Some of the girls want to meet with you, Mac. That's why I came today. They asked me to ask you because they figured you wouldn't even let them in the door, and they're freaked out that you know a prince.
Her feline eyes narrowed.
What's he like?
Her young voice was hushed with a dangerous blend of fascination and awakening hormones. Blaine was the she-seer equivalent of Lucifer, and even if his motives and mankind's current predicament mirrored ours, he was to be feared, shunned, and, a deep part of me insisted, destroyed. Seelie and Unseelie alike, the Fae were our enemies. They always had been and always would be. Why, oh, why do we find the most dangerous, forbidden men the most irresistible? Fae princes kill she-seers, Danny.
He hasn't killed you.
She shot me an admiring look.
It looked like you had him eating out of your hand.
No woman could have that Fae eating out of her hand, I said sharply. So don't be daydreaming about it.
She ducked her head guiltily, and I sighed, remembering what it was like to be 13. Blaine would have been the object of every one of my teenage fantasies. No rock star, no actor could have competed with the golden, immortal, inhumanly erotic prince. In my daydreams, I would have wowed him with my cleverness, seduced him with my budding femininity, succeeded in winning his heart where no other woman could because, of course, in my fantasy, I would have endowed him with the heart he didn't have.
He's so beautiful, she said wistfully. He's like an angel.
Yep, I agreed flatly. The one that fell. My words did nothing to change the expression on her face. I could only hope she never saw him again. I could see no reason that she would. At some point in the near future, she and I were going to have a long talk about life. She was overdue. I almost laughed. I'd been overdue, too. Then I'd come to Dublin.
Tell me more about this meeting they want, Danny.
What were they after?
After you left that night, everybody got into a huge fight. Rowena sent everybody back to bed, but once she left, it started up again. Some of the girls wanted to hunt you down and get even. But Kat, she was with Moira that day, said that you didn't mean to do it, and it would be wrong, and a lot of girls listened to her. Some of them aren't happy with Rowena. They think she keeps too tight a rein on us. They think we should be out in the streets, doing what we can to stop what's going on, instead of just biking past it every day, watching. She almost never lets us go out to kill.
With only one weapon, I can see why. I hated agreeing with the old woman, but I concurred on that score.
She keeps the sword herself. She doesn't like to be without it. I think she's afraid.
I could understand that, too. Last night, after I'd gotten on the bike and we'd sped off, I'd checked for my spear. Despite his obvious displeasure with me, Blaine had kept his word and returned it at parting. I showered with it strapped to my thigh. I slept with it in my hand.
We could fight, Mac. Maybe we can't kill them without the sword, but we sure could kick some feckin' ass, and maybe they'd think twice about setting up shop in our city. I could save dozens of people every day if she'd just let me. I see him walking down the street holding hands with a human.
She shuddered.
And I know that person's gonna die. I could save them.
But the Unseelie you stop would only move on to another victim if you didn't kill it, Danny. You'd be saving one person to sentence another. I thought this through myself. I felt the same things. We were hopelessly outnumbered with only two weapons. Her mouth twisted.
That's what Rowena says, too.
Ugh. I was not like Rowena. In this case, she's right. Diverting them isn't enough. We need more weapons, more ways to kill them, and I can't give up my spear, so if they're using you to bait some kind of trap, I warned. I didn't kill Moira. It was an accident. But I won't let anyone take my spear away.
They're not trying to trap you, Mac, I swear. They just want to talk to you. They think there's stuff happening that you don't know about, and they think you might know some stuff we don't. They want to trade info.
What do they think I don't know? I demanded. Was there some threat I was unaware of? A new, even worse enemy out there gunning for me?
If I tell you anything else, they'll get mad at me, and half the Abbey's usually mad at me. I'm not pissing off the other half. They said they'd meet on neutral ground, and that you could choose where. Will you do it?
I made a show of considering it, but my mind was already made up. I wanted to know what they knew, and desperately wanted access to their archives. Rowena had given me a glimpse into one of their many books about the Fae the day Danny had taken me to meet her at PHI. She'd shown me the first few sentences of an entry about Blaine, and I'd been itching to get my hands on it ever since and finish the rest of it. If information about the Shi'Sadu existed, it was a good bet that She-Seers had it somewhere. Not to mention my hope that somewhere in the Abbey were answers to my questions about my mother and heritage. Yes, but I'll need a show of faith.
What do you want?
Rowena has a book in her desk. Danny stiffened instantly.
No feckin' way. She'd know. I'm not taking it.
Not asking you to. You have a digital camera?
Nope, sorry, can't do.
She folded her arms. I'll loan you mine. Photograph the pages about Blaine and bring them to me. My plan would serve the dual purposes of getting me more information and proving that she was willing to defy Rowena for me. It would also make her read about the object of her misguided fantasies and hopefully cure her of them. She stared at me.
If she catches me, I'm dead.
Don't let her catch you then, I said. Then I softened. Do you think you can do it, Danny? If it's really too dangerous. She was only 13, and I was pitting her against a woman with years of wisdom and experience, ruthless intentions, and a spine of steel. Her lambent eyes gleamed.
I'm super fast, remember? You want it, I'll get it.
She glanced around the bookstore.
But if things get really bad, I'm coming to live with you.
Oh, no, you're not, I said, trying not to smile. She was such a teenager.
Why not? It looks cool to me. No rules, either.
I'd drown you in rules. All kinds of rules. No TV, no loud music, no boys, no magazines, no snacks or soda, no sugar, no...
I get it, I get it,
she said sourly. Then she brightened.
So, I can tell him you'll meet?
I nodded. Danny watched the counter for me while I ran upstairs and got my Kodak. I changed the setting so it would take the highest resolution photos possible and told her to make sure she got the entire pages so I could download them onto my computer, zoom in on the images, and read. I told her to call me as soon as she had them. We'd set a place and time to meet. Be safe, Danny, I said, as she wheeled her bike out the door. There was a storm brewing in the streets of Dublin, and I didn't mean those dense black clouds currently crawling across the rooftops. I could feel it, like a bad moon really was rising, and even worse trouble was on the way. Ever since I'd danced to that song the other night, I hadn't been able to shake it from my head. It was such a boppy, happy-sounding music to be accompanied by such grim predictions. She glanced back over her shoulder at me.
We're kind of like sisters, aren't we, Mac?
A knife twisted in my gut. There was such a hopeful look on her face.
Yeah, I guess we are.
I didn't want another sister, ever. I didn't want to worry about anyone but me. Still, I did the closest thing to praying I knew how to do, and whispered a silent invocation to the universe to watch over her as I closed the door. The dark clouds creeping over the city exploded, thunderheads crashing, raindrops biting with October's chill teeth, flash flooding the pavement, gushing down the gutters, overflowing the grates, and sweeping all my customers away. I catalogued books until my vision blurred. I made myself a cup of tea, turned on the gas logs, cozied up to the fire, and paged through a book on Irish fairy tales, hunting for truth in the myth, while picking at a lunch that was the UK equivalent of ramen noodles. I haven't had much of an appetite since I ate Unseelie. Not for food, anyway. Last night, Barons and I hadn't said a word to each other all the way back to the bookstore. He'd dropped me at the front and watched me walk in. Then he'd given me a smile that was all teeth and nastiness and driven straight into the dark zone, managing to say, "Fuck you, Miss Lane," without even bothering to open his mouth.
He knows how much his refusal to tell me why the shades don't eat him irks me. I want to be so fearless. I want to be so bad and tough that all the monsters leave me alone. I tugged Alina's journal entry from my pocket and read it again, more slowly this time. Her worst fear had come true, and here I was, left alone with a lifetime of things unsaid and undone. I'd never gotten that hug. I knew I needed to push past the emotional punch and focus on the Haven's prophecy, the five, and the new questions her journal entry raised, but I was detoured by memories. There'd been so many nights that I'd sprawled on my bed, talking to Alina on the phone. Mom was always making good stuff, filling the house with the mouth-watering aroma of yeast, caramel cream sauces, and spices. Dad was always yelling at the Braves with old man Molly during baseball season. I would have prattled aimlessly about boys and school and my idiotic complaints about whatever I used to complain about, believing the whole time she and I were immortal. What a shock when life ends at 24. Nobody's ready for it. I missed my rainbow quilt. I missed my mom. God, I missed. I stood, crammed the page back in my pocket, and pruned my dark thoughts in the seedling stage before they could sprout. Depression gets you nowhere but tangled in an overgrown garden that can choke the life out of you. I moved to the window and stared out at the rain. Gray street, gray day, gray rain, splashing grayly on gray pavement. What was that Jaws of Clay song on my iPod? My world is a flood. Slowly I become one with the mud. As I stared, unblinking, into the grayness, a brilliant shaft of sunlight splintered the rain, directly in front of me. I looked up, seeking its source. The beam pierced the dark clouds. A radiant lance shot down from heaven, forming a perfect golden circle on the dreary, drenched sidewalk, inside which there was no rain, no storm, just sunshine and warmth. I thumbed a Tums from my pocket. My tea and noodles were abruptly an unpleasant stew in my stomach. Speaking of the She-Seer's equivalent of Lucifer. Funny, I said, but I wasn't laughing. Fae-induced nausea coupled with an impossible illusion spelled one thing, V-L-A-N-E. The only thing missing was a frenzy of Fae lust, and I braced myself for it. His name piercing my tongue suddenly tasted sweet as honey, felt smooth and supple and sexy in my mouth. Go away, I told the illusory shaft of sun, focusing my She-Seer center on it. It didn't evaporate. Then Blaine was standing in it, but he wasn't Fae, and he wasn't the biker man. He was a version of himself I'd never seen before. He looked human, and he was definitely muted. Still, he was inhumanly beautiful. He was wearing white swim trunks that contrasted perfectly with his gold skin and flaunted his flawless body. His hair slid like silk over his bare shoulders. His eyes were amber, warm with invitation. He'd come to punish me, I knew that. And still, I wanted to step outside, splash through the rain, and join him in his sunny oasis. Hold his hand. Run away for a while, maybe to Fairy, where I could play volleyball and drink beers with a perfectly convincing illusion of Alina. I stuffed that thought back in my padlocked box and checked the chains. They weren't holding so good today. I will attend to you later, he'd said last night. You broke our bargain. There is a price for that. Leave me alone, Blaine, I called through the window. It echoed off the glass back at me, and I wasn't sure he heard. Maybe he could read lips. Suddenly the windowpane separating us was gone. Drops of wind-driven rain needled my face, my hands.
You are forgiven, Michaela. Upon reflection, I realized it was not your fault. You were not responsible for Baron's interference. I do not expect you to be able to control him. To demonstrate my understanding, I have come, not to punish you, but to give you a gift.
His gifts all had strings attached, and I told him so with a tongue that tasted of nectar.
Not this one. This is for you and only for you. I will gain nothing from it.
I don't believe you.
I could have harmed you long before now if I wished.
So? Maybe you're just putting it off, sucking me in for the grand finale. I brushed rain from my face and pushed my hair back. It was simultaneously curling and drooping, becoming an unmanageable mess. You can put the window back any time.
I took your hand and accompanied you into the halls of my enemies, trusting you not to null me. Return the honor, Shizir.
The temperature was dropping.
I gave you my name, the means to summon me at will.
The rain turned to sleet. Not inspiring trust with your little display of temper. A strong gust of wind dumped a sudden bucket of rain on me.
Oh, you did that on purpose!
I dragged a sleeve across my face, mopping at it. It didn't help. My sweater was soaked. He didn't deny it, just cocked his head, studied me.
I will tell you about the one you call Lord Master.
I don't call him Lord Master, and never will.
I bristled. I battled the urge to leap out the window, grab him, and demand to know whatever he knew.
Would you like to know who he is?
You said you'd never heard of him when I told you about him. I studied my nails, knowing if he knew how badly I wanted the information, he'd make it harder to get. Probably try to trade it for sex.
I have learned much since then.
So, who is he? I said in a bored voice.
Accept my gift.
Tell me what your gift is first.
You have no plans for the afternoon?
He glanced at the flooded street beyond his warm, sunny oasis.
You will have no customers. Will you sit in your chair and pine for lost things?
You're pissing me off, Lane.
Have you ever seen the Caribbean Sea? There are hues in those waves that nearly vie with fairy.
I sighed. No, I dreamed of it, though. Sun slanting off water was one of my favorite things in the world, whether it was swimming pool blue or shades of tropic. During the winter in Ashford, I used to go to the local travel agent's office in town and thumb through the pamphlets, dreaming of all the exotic sunny places the husband I hadn't met yet was going to take me. Part of the reason I was so depressed in Dublin was from simple lack of sun. My time in the subterranean caves beneath the Burren had sapped me. I not only love sun, I need it. I think if I'd grown up in the colder, drearier north, I'd have been a completely different person. Sure, the sun comes out here, but not nearly as often as it does in Georgia, and not the same way. Dublin doesn't get those months of long, blissfully, blazingly hot summer days, crowned by a sky so blue it hurts to look at, and a sultry heat that warms you to the core. My bones are cold here. So is my heart. A few hours in the tropics, plus information about the Lord Master? The rain slanting in through the windowless hole pricked my skin with the icy spines of a dozen porcupines. Would he really forego retaliation against me for breaking our bargain? I was in no position to shut the Seely Prince out of my life. Whether I trusted him or not, I needed to be on decent terms with him. And if he really was offering me a get-out-of-jail-free card, I'd be crazy not to take it. I couldn't cower in the bookstore from him every time he showed up. I was going to have to confront him on unwarded ground eventually. Put the window back. I wasn't going to be blamed by barons for another missing window or risk that big nasty shade out back getting in.
Do you accept my gift?
I nodded. When the pain was back, I went to the counter, swapped my soaking cardigan for a dry jacket over my damp shirt, and bent to extract the spear from my boot and holster it beneath my arm. It was gone. Apparently, the bookstore being warded only kept him out. It didn't keep him from performing his tricks in or on the store itself. I made a mental note to discuss this problem with the intractable owner and keeper of the wards. Surely, with all his secrets and inexplicable abilities, barons could do better than that. I flipped the sign to closed, locked up, splashed through the puddles, stepped into the sun, and when Blaine offered his hand, nullified my intent to null, and laced my fingers with his. I was in Cancun, Mexico,
sitting in a disappearing edge swimming pool, on a bar stool that was actually under the water, watching palm trees sway in a sultry breeze against the unmistakable aqua splendor of the Caribbean Sea, drinking coconut, lime, and tequila from a scooped-out pineapple, with the salt spray of breaking surf and sun kissing my skin. Translation? I had died and gone to heaven. Dublin, the rain, my problems, my depression, all of it had vanished in the blink of a Fae Princess sift. My bikini today, courtesy of Lane, was leopard print, three embarrassingly tiny triangles. A gold belly chain, inset with amber, draped my hips. I didn't care how nearly naked I was. The day was blindingly bright and beautiful. The sun was warm and healing on my shoulders. The double shots of Cuervo Gold in my drink weren't hurting either. I was glowing golden inside and out. "So who is he? You said you'd tell me about the Lord Master," I prompted. His hands were on me then, rubbing suntan oil into my skin that smelled of the coconut and almond, and for a short time I forgot that I even had a tongue that could ask questions. Even when he's fully muted, there's magic in a Death by Sex Fae's hands. They make you feel like you're being touched by the only man who could ever know you, understand you, give you what you need. Illusion, deception, and lie, perhaps, but it still feels real. The mind may know the difference, but the body doesn't. The body is a traitor. I leaned into Vlaine's touch, moving under his strong, sure strokes, purring inwardly while he petted me. His iridescent eyes burned a shimmering shade of amber, like the gems on my belly chain, grew sleepy, heated, promising me sex that would blow my mind away.
"I have a suite, Michaela," he said softly. "Come."
He took my hand. "I bet you say that to all the girls," I murmured, and pulled away. I shook my head, trying to clear it.
"I despise girls. I like women. They are infinitely more interesting. Girls break. Women can surprise you."
Girls break. I had no doubt he'd broken more than a few in his time. I'd not forgotten the book in Rowena's study that credited this very Fae with being the founder of the Wild Hunt. The thought jarred me back to reality. "Who is he?" I asked again, scooting to the farthest edge of my bar stool. "Stop touching me. Honor your promise." He sighed.
"What is it you humans say? All work and no play
might just keep me alive," I finished dryly.
"I will keep you alive."
"Baron says the same thing. I'd prefer to be able to do it myself."
"You are a mere human, a woman at that."
I felt my jaw jut. "Like you said, women can surprise you. Answer my question. Who is he?" I motioned the bartender for a fresh pineapple, hold the tequila, and waited.
"One of us."
"Huh?" I blinked. "The Lord Master is Fae?" Blaine nodded. Although I'd gotten a Fae read off the Lord Master the two times we'd met, I'd also gotten a human read, similar to what I sensed in Malouche and Derek O'Banion. I'd thought the Fae part was because the Lord Master ate Fae, not because he was Fae. But I don't sense full Fae from him. What's the deal?
"He is no longer. He who calls himself the Lord Master was formerly a Seely known as Derek, a trusted member of the Queen's High Council."
I blinked. He was Seely? Then what was he doing leading the Unseelie? What happened?
"He betrayed our queen. She discovered he was working secretly with the royal hunters to overthrow her and return to the old ways and old days in which no Fae bowed to an insult of a compact or had any use for humans other than passing diversion."
Alien, ancient eyes studied me a moment.
"Derek's special diversion was playing with human women for a long, cruel time, before destroying them."
An image of Alina's body as it had looked lying on the morgue table rose up in my mind.
"Have I told you how much I hate him?"
I hissed. For a moment, I couldn't say any more, couldn't even think past him hurting my sister and leaving her to die. I breathed deep and slow, then said,
"So what? You threw him out of Faerie and dumped him on us?"
When the Queen uncovered his treason, she stripped him of his power and immortality, and banished him to your realm, condemning him to suffer the brevity and humiliation of a mortal life, and die. The cruelest sentence for a Fae, crueler even than ceasing to exist by a mortal weapon, or simply vanishing, the way some of us do. To die was insult to injury. Mortal indignity is the greatest indignity of all.
He was so arrogant. Was he a prince? A death by sex fae like Blaine? Was that how he'd seduced my sister?
No. But he was old among our kind. Powerful.
How can you know that if you've drunk from the cauldron? I pointed out an obvious bit of illogic. A side effect of extreme longevity, Blaine had told me, was eventual madness. They dealt with it by drinking from the Seelie Hallow, the cauldron. The sacred drink wiped their memories clean and let them start over with a brand new Fae life and no memory of who they'd once been.
The cauldron is not without flaws, Michaela. Memory is, how did one of your artists say it? Persistent. It was fashioned to ease the onus of eternity, not leave us blank. When we drink from it, we emerge speaking the first language we knew. Darox is mine, the ancient one, from the dawn of our race. In such a way we know things about each other, despite the divestiture of memories. Some attempt to plant information about themselves for their next incarnation to find. The Fae Court is an unpleasant place to be, stripped of ability to discern friend from foe. We prolong drinking as long as possible. Tatters from earlier times sometimes remain. Some must drink twice, three times to be cleansed.
"How can I find Derek?" I asked. Now that I knew his name, I would never call him anything but that, or a mocking L.M. again.
"You cannot. He is hiding where even we have been unable to track him. He slips in and out of Unseelie through portals unknown to us. We are hunting him, the other Seelie princes and I."
"How can a mere human elude you and move in and out of Fae realms?" I goaded. I was angry. They'd made this mess. They had dumped Derek into our realm because they'd been having problems, and it was my world that was suffering, my sister who'd been killed because of it. The least they could do was clean up after themselves, and fast.
My queen did not strip his knowledge from him, an oversight she now regrets. She believed he would die quickly. It is why we did not suspect him of being the one behind the trouble in your realm. Once human, Darok had no immunity against the many illnesses that plague your kind, and those who live as gods tend to underestimate the brutality of the herd when they walk among it.
"He's not the only one who underestimated something," I said frostily. "Herd my petunia. With so much inhuman power at their fingertips, they certainly were humanly fallible, and we humans were the ones paying for it." Blaine ignored the jibe.
"We believed if he did not contract a mortal illness, he would anger a human with his arrogance and become one of your violent crime statistics. Contrary to our expectations, since Derek has been mortal, he has acquired immense power. He knew where to look and how to get it, and he has always had allies among the royal hunters. He promises them freedom from the Unseelie prison where they are stabled, a promise no other Fae would make. Hunters cannot be trusted."
"And other Fae can," I said dryly.
"Hunters go beyond all bounds."
Here Vlaine momentarily flickered, as if struggling not to revert to another form.
"They have taught Darok to eat the flesh of Fae to steal Fae power."
He paused, and for a fleeting moment the temperature plunged so sharply that I couldn't draw a breath, and the ocean, as far as I could see it, iced. Abruptly, all was normal again.
He will die very slowly when we find him. The Queen may make him suffer immortally for it. We do not savage our own.
I looked away hurriedly and stared out at the sea, owning the same sin, feeling it flashing in incriminating neon letters on my forehead. Fae Eater. Darok had taught Malouche, Malouche had taught me, and I'd taught Jane. I had no desire to suffer immortally or otherwise. What can I do to help?
Leave it to us to find Darok,
Blaine said.
You must do as the Queen has charged you and find the book. The walls between our realms are dangerously thin. If Darok succeeds in bringing them down, the Unseelie will escape their prison. Without the Shisadu, we are as powerless to re-imprison our dark brethren as you. Once loose, they will consume your world and destroy your race.
He paused before adding grimly,
and, quite possibly, mine.
Chapter 9. At 9:45 I was waiting for Barons to arrive and my voice lessons to begin. We'd set a standing engagement, and although I knew he was probably still angry with me, I expected him to show. I didn't mind hopping. He could make me squawk like a chicken, for all I cared. If he made me feel stupid enough, I'd figure out how to resist him. Christian had been right. If the walls came down, all the Unseelie would be freed. And I'd been right, too. The Seelie couldn't re-imprison them without the Shisadu. Despite the grimness of our situation, I was once again focused, determined Mac. I'd stolen some sun. Real human sun, not fairy stuff, like last time with Blaine. And stashed it away, solar energy for my cells. A junkie, I'd gotten my fix. Thumbing my nose at the chilly weather outside, which I had no intention of venturing into, I was wearing my favorite short white skirt, pretty sandals, and a lime gold sleeveless top that tinted the green of my eyes a lighter, more intense shade. My skin was burnished gold from my hours in the sun. I looked and felt great. After showering and doing my makeup and hair, I talked to Dad for a while. In Ashford, it was supper time, and it had been 88 degrees today. In Dublin, it was 38. But knowing Cancun was a mere sift away made it a lot easier to handle. In my refreshed state of mind, I decided to divulge some information to Barons. Try fishing with a baited hook instead of demanding answers. Do things his way. I was going to show him the page from my sister's journal that I'd received today. Blaine had slipped. Surely every now and then Barons did, too. Maybe his face would betray something. Maybe he knew what the five were. Maybe he'd have some idea who had Alina's journal. I didn't believe he did. I couldn't see any reason he would choose those specific entries to send to me. Then again, I couldn't see any reason anyone would choose them, but someone had. If I shared something with him, maybe he'd return the favor. Perhaps he felt the answers were innocuous enough that they didn't matter. Sonny Mac felt it was worth a try. The bell above the door tinkled. Baron stepped in. He swept a gaze from my head to my feet, slowly. His face tightened, then he worked his way back up, just as slowly. I guess he didn't like my clothes. He rarely does. Left to my own devices, I dress too happy to suit his tastes. Ms. Rainbow and Mr. Knight, that's what we look like walking around together. To diffuse any tension left over from last night, I offered him a smile and a friendly, hey, letting him know I was willing to start this night off fresh, and hoped he was, too. I sensed his violence a split second before he attacked me, and then it was too late. He slammed the door behind him, deadbolts ratcheted into place.
Tell me every detail of the last time you saw the Shisadu.
Voice compacted my body in a head-to-toe vice and squeezed brutally.
Shit, shit, shit.
I doubled over, the breath slammed out of me. A legion of voices rebounded in the room, careening off the walls, intensifying as they zoomed left and right, up and down, then through me, burrowing into my skin, rearranging things in my head, making my mind his. Dominating. Seducing. Selling me the lie that his will was mine and I lived to obey it. Sweat beaded on my brow and upper lip and slicked my palms. The harder I tried to fight the compulsion, the less possible it was to inflate my lungs, to move any part of my body at all. A paper doll, I hung.